Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome, everyone, to Take Human Action PA, episode 27. I'm Calvin, and we got Jacob here as well. How you doing, Jacob?
I was trying to minimize the screen and move it, and then it disappeared on me, and I didn't know if I was muted or not. I'm fantastic, man. I'm glad to be here and excited for our guest tonight, who I'm doing a double feature with. He's going to be on this show, and then if you're watching this and you can't get enough, just... you know, come on to like hour two after this one's done.
Oh, the after party. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For someone I've known for feels like 2 years now. I don't know if it's quite that long yet, but this appearance has definitely been overdue. But let me make a few quick announcements first at the top of the show. So our Call to Human Action is still running. If you're in our group already, if you're signed up and onboarded and everything, you should have gotten an email about it. If you did not, for whatever reason, reach out to me. And if you haven't joined yet and you would like to join the caucus, then please join at takehumanaction.com and sign up to get on our email list and find out what all the caucus is all about. We still got the state convention coming up too. March 3rd through 5th in Reading, PA. Still waiting on the website to launch, but we'll give updates on that. When
I don't know what to do with myself. I don't have to drive 5 hours to get to convention this year.
I could get away with not getting a room, but I think I still will.
Yeah, you know, same.
Right. So you have anything on your end?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I already plugged my only announcement, which is if you are watching this after first hour, we can maybe post the link in the chat or something near the end for the second stream. But yeah, no, I'm ready to go.
All right. Well, without further ado, then we will bring on our guest. So he is the board rep out of the Philadelphia County Libertarian Party. He is the founder of Don't Tread on Philly. And he has a lot to say on the transitioner issue, being a detransitioner himself. Let's bring on Torin Danowski. How are you doing, Torin?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's good to be on here with you. Sorry, I had to bring the pipe. I figured with tonight's topic, I needed to just be as like manly as possible. So.
You know, I was gonna say that, but I was debating whether or not to say it. So you took the words out of my mouth.
The pipe's the only way to do it. I mean, I don't own my own pipe, but I've never liked tobacco except when I've tried it through a pipe. I don't have the time or the patience for it is my problem. And also, it's just
any form other than a cigarette. I think I've tried it by now, except for a pipe. That's the one thing.
Hookah's also fun.
Hookah, that's
even more work than a pipe.
It is a lot of work.
Yeah, I tried cigars, but that's an art form. You need to really know how to do it, which I do not.
Sometimes it's an art form, or sometimes when you're going to like dumb college frat parties, they just have like this giant like 10-person hookahs that everyone's sharing the mouthpiece on, which is really gross now that I think back on some of the parties I attended. I probably made out with more dudes than I care to admit in indirect contact with a hookah.
Were they hookahs or bongs at that point?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we should get started here. So I actually don't know where the best place is to get started with you. Like around the time I met you, around the time that you joined with the Libertarian Party of Philadelphia. But
this is his first
why don't
time
you tell us
show, right?
Your story as far as how you became a libertarian and what brought you there?
Yeah, so I think I joined the party, I want to say July or August of 2021. I had been politically homeless for a long time. I think I had grown up a very conservative Christian, very kind of fundamental, kind of religious right, just kind of diehard GOP guy. Regretfully voted for John McCain in 2008. But I didn't know any better. I was stupid. I think I was 19 at the time. I was really dumb. Let's see. I kind of stopped being very politically active or outspoken in college. And then I ended up being a Southern Baptist missionary of all things. I was never actually Southern Baptist, but somehow ended up a Southern Baptist missionary. I spent some time in Southeast Asia. And I was there for the 2012 election. So I wasn't there around for, I was kind of too dumb for Ron Paul's 2008 run. I wasn't around for his 2012 run. And I was just looking at politics from kind of the other side of the globe and just realizing, just how much broader the world was than the views that I had growing up as a conservative Christian. I think I still had a lot of my conservative social values, but held them much more loosely, and definitely still had very sort of conservative, or at least what we would consider traditionally conservative, free market economic principles, which, over the last 10 years, since my kind of initial sort of falling out when the GOP became de-glamorized to me, I've learned the GOP is not about conservative free market principles either. They're just about, printing money and keeping the war machine going. So I was very kind of politically homeless for a long time. Wasn't very outspoken for a while. During the Trump run in 2016, I voted for Gary Johnson because I didn't want to vote for either candidate. Didn't really know who the Libertarian Party was, but it sounded cool. And Johnson at least had a semi-coherent message to someone who just doesn't know libertarianism at all at the time. And so I was just kind of homeless there, was still politically homeless up until the lockdowns. The lockdowns kind of sent me sort of on a little bit of a spiral of anger. I was dealing with a lot personally at the time and was realizing my need for community and my need for people, and realizing that I'm someone who just needs to get out and be around people in order to be energized, be fully myself. And I happened to live at home alone at the time, and the government was suddenly telling me that I had to be at home alone 24/7. And obviously Trump wasn't, he was terrible with the lockdowns. I mean, in fact, he was a fan of them early on, and he put Fauci up into the positions that he did, gave him the authority that he did. The Democrats were horrible. Philly was horrible. Everything was just horrible. And yeah, it was terrible. And I didn't really know where to look in 2020. Certainly LP National wasn't really messaging on COVID lockdowns at all. So didn't have much hope for the Libertarian Party at that time.
Well, Torin, remember, it just went without saying, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that was just the norm for so long. It's crazy to think about how it's changed now. But, yeah. The funny thing is, like, if you were seeing this bad messaging from National coming out at the time, at least, then what motivated you to come out for the first meeting?
Yeah, so I kind of started going down a rabbit hole. Once the George Floyd riots started happening here in Philly, and things were just kind of nuts, and you could see the hypocrisy from the left of like, oh, well, we can't be around anybody, but if we're protesting, we can be around millions of people and swap spit all day long. I started kind of going down rabbit holes. I found Brett Weinstein and his Unity 2020 idea and thought, well, this is better than what we have now, so let's follow this and listen to this guy. And then from Weinstein, I think I fell into like Benjamin Boyce and listening to his stuff about what happened to Weinstein at Evergreen College, which I had remembered from 2017. And then suddenly YouTube suggested a Tim Pool video. It was like, oh, liberal not going to vote for Biden, might vote for Trump. I'm like, let me take a look at this. So I watched one of Tim Pool's live streams, and this is probably August of 2020. And I was like, okay, Tim sounds like an interesting guy. I'm going to keep watching some of his live streams. And I think his very next live stream was Michael Malice. And Malice was the first anarchist I'd ever listened to. And I was like, this guy's interesting. I don't know if I can get behind anarchy, but Malice seems kind of cool. And he is spot on with everything he's saying. And then from there, I think the very next episode I watched after that was Maj. Maj Toure of Black Guns Matter, right out of here in Philadelphia. And I'm like, oh, this guy is right freaking awesome. Yeah. So then I started listening to Malice, and Malice converted me to at least thinking anarchy might be an answer pretty darn quickly. And just about everything Malice was saying, I thought that was spot on. And sure enough, you start listening to Malice long enough, you get acquainted with Dave Smith and Tom Woods. So started listening to Dave Smith, Tom Woods. And by the time, what was it, May 2021, they're talking about all the shenanigans that were going on in the LP. Dave Smith was talking about it all the time. And one of the episodes that he did with Karen Ann Harlos, that where he was talking about all the nonsense that went on in New Hampshire and was getting ready to go on in like Delaware and everywhere else. I was like, oh, wow. And this actually somewhat happened in PA too. Was it as illegal and backhanded as, New Hampshire? No, it was completely by the books, and they got away with it here in PA.
The credentialing process was a little unkosher, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest of it, though, I guess was by the books, technically. I hate to, like, be the person that, like, beats, like, the dead horse of that history, of that convention, but, like, when a person who vehemently hates the caucus and who's running for a officer position is in charge of the credentialing table and then doesn't credential like over like a couple dozen different people, I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's something to that, but we don't need to worry about it now.
So yeah, they were talking about everything that had gone down in PA and how like if they just had more people, it could have made a difference. And I was like, oh. You know what? I don't really want to join the LP. My vision of the LP is all the losers from back in college who said they were libertarians. I don't want anything to do with this. But these Mises Caucus people seem pretty cool. Let me see if I can help. So, I signed up. I talked to Mark Jerchak. I was right down here. I was in my basement because I was building this bar that I have here in my basement that summer. Was talking to Mark, and I was like, okay, this is cool. He got me connected to the Philadelphia Libertarian Party, Liberty on the Rocks, Mises Caucus, all the above. And that fall, it just kind of took off from there.
All right, so we don't have to dwell on this for too long, but for those who might be in the Philadelphia area, what is Liberty on the Rocks? And if someone would want to go to one of those, then how would they do that?
Yeah, Liberty on the Rocks is just a twice monthly meeting. It's like a happy hour on Tuesdays. We have them at 6 o'clock on the second and fourth Tuesdays. The second Tuesday is at Ryan's Pub in Manayunk. And then the fourth Tuesday is at Adobe Cafe in South Philly. And basically, yeah, it's just a Liberty hangout. It's not party affiliated. We try to avoid party business, but we just talk Liberty and we talk philosophy and current events and all that good stuff. It's a good time to just hang out with other people who are just kind of fed up with what's going on in the world today and want to see more Liberty.
Yeah, it's interesting for me because going back to 2015 or so, that's when I started going to Liberty on the Rocks. And then the next year, a group of us who had connected through Liberty on the Rocks ended up starting LP Philly. So that's the group that it all came from, too. So it has a special place for me, for sure. I was going there for a long time. I would definitely check it out if you're in the Philly area. And they have it in many other cities around the country, too. So if you're in a major city, chances are you have Liberty on the Rocks. So if you search for it online, you can find their website and see where there's what cities they have meetups in.
Yeah, highly recommended. It's always a good time. Always different guests, always different people hanging out. It's a good time.
Yeah. So now back to you. You jumped in head first on everything. Really, as far as the politics side of it went, like, we can come back after this to like what happened on the personal side of things, but on the political side of things, like, from the time that you came to your first meeting, like, what kind of things did you do to get more involved with the party, and what motivated you to do it?
Yeah, so part of my thing, again, I was fed up with COVID stuff. I was kind of sick of it. I was sick of being at home alone, having it be quasi-illegal for me to hang out with anybody outside of my dogs. So I was kind of fed up with that. I was building this bar in my basement. I'm like, hey, you know, if lockdowns happen again or vax mandates or whatever, I've got this bar to hang out in. So I remember... I was probably the annoying guy in some of the Mises Caucus chats saying, hey, check out my bar. Come hang out. And I think I only ever had like one event with some people over here in my bar. But it got me on the radar pretty quick as being somebody who wanted to be involved and wanted to take action. Because, yeah, I wanted to build some sort of Liberty culture. You know, Liberty was sort of... you know, it wasn't necessarily born, but it was definitely fostered here in the bars of Philly. It was fostered in the speakeasies of Philadelphia. You know, some of the founding fathers would get, you know, hang out in, you know, the back rooms and the speakeasies, plotting what was going on, risking their lives, knowing that if they got caught, they were done for. So I wanted to see that kind of culture get rebuilt here in Philly. So that was my main goal. And I thought the Mises Caucus really sort of took that same sort of stance. So I'd been asked at one point to, you know, kind of get involved, possibly be a county organizer for Philly. And I kind of took that and ran with that a little bit, created this Twitter profile for LPMC Philly. And I wanted to say, hey, let's have this like tagline. Let's have something cool that's like uniquely Philly, that could represent Philly and people we could build a culture behind. And at that time, I was kind of obsessed with the Gadsden flag, you know, the don't tread on me with the snake. And so I said, what if we take this and said, don't tread on Philly? What if we made don't tread on Philly the tagline for the Mises Caucus here in Philly? And so I made that my little tagline, made up some graphics, put it on Twitter. And then, I don't know, it was about a week after kind of being involved and starting to, you know, go the messaging route with the LPMC on Twitter that Philadelphia instituted their vaccine mandates, and it might have been a year ago today or right around then that happened. And immediately I was like, no, this isn't good. I am going to fight this and, do whatever I can to fight against this. So me and Mark Bazzacco and Joy Weir got together and said, well, let's get together and protest this. And we decided to protest. We're going to protest on the New Year's Day parade. I think we ended up getting like 30 or 40 people out, but it wasn't, we're going to have a lot more, but it had rained for the parade and they had to reschedule it for a Sunday. So that screwed up a lot of people's plans, but we ended up getting a lot of attention because we had all these signs that said like, don't tread on Philly or COVID-1984, all this kind of cool stuff that we got to pass out to the participants of the parade. And a lot of the participants are these, like, you know, hardcore, like, South Philly, you know, second, third generation immigrant people that just, I mean, they hate City Hall, hate the government. It was perfect. They would take the signs, dance with them, get their pictures taken. We were in the newspaper. And we ended up, we said, what do we want to call it? And we said, Don't Tread on Philly. Let's call what we're doing Don't Tread on Philly. So Don't Tread on Philly ended up morphing into this sort of organization that was fighting against the COVID tyranny here in Philly.
Yeah, and that's about when you started Don't Tread on Philly, I think, is when I, you know, first heard of you, kind of started interacting with you, and I had you on my show and interviewed you about that. Around the same time, you were going through some personal stuff, too, and that's part of what we're here to talk about tonight is sort of, you know, the things you went through and sort of, you know, how that shaped your views on different things pertaining to the culture and politics and stuff, both in Philly, but also, you know, it obviously affects the broader culture and our, you know, our country and or just Western culture or the world, or, you know, you can really scale it up however much you want. But yeah, let's go into, you know, the things that you were going through and, you know, share as, you know, it's your story, so share as much or as little as you want to. But just talk about what that was like, and you know, from, I guess, like how it started and how it correlated with what your involvement in the party was, and, you know, go from there.
Yeah. So it's a good segue. I think I met Calvin prior to this.
I knew Torin, and then knew you, and then Torin again. So that was interesting seeing it from all sides. That's for sure. But yeah, with that context in mind, go ahead.
Yeah. So, Calvin had met me beforehand. I don't think Jacob had.
We were probably just Facebook friends before.
Yeah.
And then
I think so.
But then I remembered when you first started talking about it on your profile, and then the change happened, and then I started commenting on some of your posts, just like sort of like good faith, like, you know, kind of trying to understand where you were coming from, and just trying to show you love, you know, didn't want you to feel like judged or hated or anything like that. So, but yeah, we're beating around the bush.
yeah. I wasn't really trying to. I was just trying to set the story. Mm-hmm. So I think Jacob and really most of the Mises caucus met me not as Torin, but as Audrey. I had come out as publicly as trans back in October of 2021. I had just made a coming out post, changed my name on Facebook. And just kind of said, hey, this is just something I had dealt with all my life. I had dealt with gender dysphoria for as long as I could remember. It was from a very young age where I just struggled with this. Just this desire to be really the complete opposite of who I was. I wanted to be in many ways just the opposite of me. I wanted to live my life as a woman. And this is something, I dealt with it from a young age. I didn't have anything, you know, nothing specific that had brought it on. I've done a lot of work and a lot of thought, a lot of therapy to kind of dig out exactly how everything has fit together over time. And I think if we had, you know, 48 hours straight of podcasting, I could probably tell you everything about it. But we don't, and I don't want to get into that. But basically, you know, I had dealt with it for a long time. It had really flared itself up when I was in college at one point. It really went away when I was in Southeast Asia doing my mission work. But then I went through some, as I said, I was a Southern Baptist missionary, but I was not Southern Baptist. And they didn't even know about the struggles that I had. And just because I was not Southern Baptist, it caused problems. I was spiritually and emotionally abused over there. Is not cool. I'm good now. I've overcome a lot of that stuff now, but even that, like, just the aftermath of that 10 years ago kind of just sent me into this identity crisis. Like I thought I had solved it. I was like, okay, I have these desires, but they are what they are. I I love being Torin. I love being me. I love being the man that I'm growing up to be, you know, when I was like 23, 24. But then sort of the abuse that happened there just, you know, it really cut at my identity and cut at everything that I thought I had figured out in life. And I came back from Southeast Asia, had gotten married to the woman, really the woman of my dreams, a woman that I still love to death. I would do anything for her. But that didn't solve my identity crisis that was brewing. And it didn't take long for the gender stuff to kind of pop back up and for me to really struggle. And this is back in like 2013 through like 2016. And all this gender stuff was just becoming mainstream. Like, I knew about it because I had struggled with it. Had found it on, you know, talk shows when I was a kid, had found it in the Guinness Book of World Records when I was 13, you know, then start playing around on the internet and you find stuff on the internet when you're a kid. And so I knew all about it. And it was sort of this fantasy that I had thought had, you know, gone away, but really it was just dormant. And then once you started getting into, you know, 2013 through 2016, when you had like Laverne Cox showing up on Orange Is the New Black, you had Kristen Beck, the warrior trans woman, the Navy SEAL, who actually just came out as having detrans a long time ago, which I wish I would have known about. Then you had the whole, you know, Bruce Caitlyn Jenner saga. All this stuff was kind of popping up. Like all of a sudden, these trans issues were mainstream. They were no longer this societal taboo. And it was suddenly this like, oh my gosh, if I come out now, then I'm going to be accepted, which was hellish to deal with as someone struggling with an identity crisis, where I think at the time, I think at the time I knew that really it wasn't something. I think I knew the truth about it at that time. And we can get into the truth about it a little bit later, but I think I knew the truth about it. I think I knew truly, I am who I am. I'm Torin. I'm the guy you're seeing right now. I think I knew that. But the culture and really the trans rights activist and everything, for someone who was hurting and suffering and struggling in life, they got me hooked. You know, we talk about, we use the word grooming, about kids. No, adults get groomed too. And I was one of those that was groomed, that was told, you know, actually, even if you just have these questions, you're trans, you're really a woman, you need to transition. If you don't transition, you're going to kill yourself. And gosh, I was wrestling with that. I didn't want it because I thought I knew who I was. I thought I really did. I loved my wife. I wanted a family. But there was just this back and forth. And mentally, my mental health was just going down the drain. And so my wife left in 2017 just because she didn't want to deal with it anymore. And to a very large extent, I can't blame her. I struggled with that. I spent about 3 years trying to fight to get her back, fighting to get her back out of desperation to prove that you're a man is never a good thing. Fighting to hold on to a relationship to sort of prove your identity is never a good thing. Any hope there was of fixing the marriage at the time was gone because I was grasping for healing in a place where it wasn't available. And so 2021 came around, and I had dabbled with it before. I dabbled with it in 2020, but had given up. But 2021 came around, and I decided, you know what, I'm just going to do it. Maybe they're right. Maybe I'm just going to keep being miserable, and the only answer is transitioning. Because you also have to think back to that time. There weren't stories of like detransitioners out there. There wasn't anybody kind of coming up with some sort of alternative hypothesis. There are a couple like random, like older kind of creepy looking guys that were like, oh yeah, I transitioned and lived as a woman for 20 years and then went back. And it's like, yeah, you just don't seem all that credible and you kind of seem weird, especially compared to the multitude of voices telling you that, oh yeah, if you even want to be the opposite sex, like, no man actually wants to be the opposite sex. Like, no man wants to do these things. Like, no man ever struggles with these things. You're actually a woman if you want to do these things. Yeah, I fell into it. So for all of 2021, starting the spring of 2021, I was taking cross-sex hormones. Even at the time I was getting involved in the LP, before I had kind of made the announcement, I had been on hormones for about 6 months by the time I had come out publicly. And, the way I put it is, like, gender dysphoria, it's a real thing. People actually do struggle with it. It's not this fake, made up thing. And it's not something that a lot of people have control over. It's something that comes on, through a lot of factors, a lot of reasons. It's never something as simple as just like, oh, you were abused as a kid, therefore this happened. No, it's not quite that simple. There's many, many things that go into this. But at the end of the day, what I like to liken it to is it's like if you break your leg. Let's say you shatter your leg and like you have one of the bones just like snapped and it's sticking out your leg. Obviously, you have a broken leg and that's going to hurt like hell. Gender dysphoria, you know, the desire to be the opposite gender is the pain you feel. It's not the broken leg. It's the pain. There's some sort of like underlying cause, and it's always different for everyone. I figured out what it was for me eventually, thank God. But it's the pain. And think about like transitioning as like the morphine you would get. You go to the hospital, you're just about ready to die of pain. They're going to stick a needle in you, shoot you up with morphine, so you can't feel the pain of that broken leg anymore. And the thing with transitioning is, yeah, it actually kind of works. It dulls that pain. You start kind of feeling good, and you start kind of feeling good, and you're like, oh man, all these things they said about transitioning and hormones and all this stuff, it feels great. It feels really good. But here's the thing about morphine, or any opioids or any painkillers, the effects wear off. You need more and more and more and more. And yeah, I saw myself starting to go down that route. You know, for a while, it was just like, okay, I'm just going to take these hormones, see how it goes. And it's like, oh, I need to socially transition. So I come out, and then it's like, oh man, I need to actually present socially more. I need to put myself out there more. I need to make sure I'm dressing in women's clothing in public and presenting this way. And then eventually it's like, well, okay, like this feels kind of good. So, you know, what's next? Do I need like cosmetic stuff done? Like I was noticing like every step you take, it kind of feels good, but you need more. It becomes this just like addiction. And, you know, what I was finding, this was back in the, this was kind of back in the spring. This is getting into like May, June, July. I was just finding like, yeah, you know, it felt good, but going back to the analogy, my leg was still broken, and like that pain would keep searing through, and transition, it didn't fix the broken leg. Transition wasn't a steel plate to put the bones together. It wasn't a cast to reset the bones. It was just the morphine. I was doing a lot with Don't Tread on Philly. I was kind of making a name for myself. I know I had my name like floated out there for governor for the PA governor's race, but wasn't eligible. I started thinking about running for mayor here in Philly. I had everything I wanted. You know, people loved me as much as the Mises Caucus gets, you know, crapped on for being transphobic. Everybody was great to me. I mean, I could tell that there were people that just didn't agree with my choice or were uncomfortable with it. But at the same time, everybody was great and everybody treated me with dignity, respect. They realized I was on their side. People listened to me when I spoke, yet something was still wrong. Like, I'm like, why am I still miserable? Like, this feels good. Everybody, you know, everybody who I thought would hate me, particularly in the caucus, loves me. You know, my leftist friends all love me and celebrate me here in Philly. Like, I'm, you know, poster child for what Philly wants in terms of their diversity. Why am I still miserable? And what I found out was, what I kind of realized at one point was for some reason, like, I just, you know, really what it was is I hated myself. I had this just radical self-rejection. Why did I always want to be someone that's completely opposite of who I am? Because for some reason I hated myself. I thought I wasn't enough. I thought I wasn't, I thought I could never live up to my own standards or the standards other people had to me. And then suddenly I realized, wait, I am still kind of a screw up. I screw up all the time. Like, I make mistakes, I do dumb things, yet work still loves me. The people in the caucus still love me. My friends still love me. My ex-wife loved me to death, even knowing my struggles. Like, something's off here. And when that kind of clicked, and I realized that I had to stop rejecting myself, it was like someone had finally put a cast on that broken leg, and it kind of started healing. And at that point, I was just like, I don't need this anymore. So I sat with that for a little bit. I sat with it for about a week. I sat with those thoughts about a week, and then I had been doing some psychedelic assisted therapy. And I did one of those sessions with psilocybin back in July. And this was about a week after I started making these realizations. And I did this trip, and it was for the first time, like, I felt connected. By disconnecting from my body, I started to feel reconnected. I felt reconnected to myself, reconnected to my past, reconnected to who I had been and had loved. I had genuinely started to actually learn how to love myself 10 years ago before all the garbage went down in Southeast Asia. I started reconnecting with that, and immediately, like, as soon as I started, you know, kind of sobering up, it was like, yeah, this whole Audrey thing's got to go. I immediately started, you know, changing everything back on social media and kind of telling some people, hey, that, yeah, this has got to go. And it's been, you know, it's been like that since, and I think that's going on, gosh, about 6 months now, since I decided to say this is done. I wouldn't say that gender dysphoria doesn't come up. It does, but it's different. It's very different. And I've seen some of the underbelly of things too since then, and it's completely changed my beliefs. I, you know, initially when I detransitioned, I was just like, actually, maybe it's just not for me. It was just kind of that, just not for me, live and let live. It's not my thing. But since then, I've just come to know sort of too much. And for me, it's like, whereas before, gender dysphoria, like, would be on a scale of like 7 or 8 out of 10 for me constantly, and it would spike to like a 10. Now it's like, on a regular basis, it's pretty much a 0. And then it pops up every once in a while. It's like, for a while, it was popping up pretty hard and be like a 4 or 5. And now it's kind of like, it just pops up as like a 2 or a 3. And I kind of pass it off. But I've seen a lot. And I'm just like happy. I'm happy and beyond grateful, beyond blessed, that I started seeing what I started seeing before I made any, you know, absolutely permanent life altering decisions. And that's not to say I don't have loss. I mean, I lost my wife. I haven't talked to her in 4 years. We have no contact, and that's devastating to me. You know, I'm a 33-year-old male. I do love being a man. I've learned to love my masculinity and my femininity. And the more I'm finding out about myself and being grateful for who I am and thankful for who I am, the more it's like, gosh, I wish my wife could have seen this. And I lost it. because I, you know, yes, I was groomed and I was deceived into believing something that was garbage. But B, I mean, yeah, I'm an adult. I made my decisions. It's both. And it's, I just want, it's like what I want to do now is speak out and say, hey, what is going on with sort of this current cultural moment with gender? It is a major thing. And it does actually have to do with liberty. You know, it's easy to say, well, live and let live, you know, adults can do whatever they want with their bodies. And, you know, if kids are suffering and gender dysphoric and trans, then we need to try to, we need to help them and they're suffering. You know, for a lot, I mean, there's a lot of really well-meaning people out there. A lot of really well-meaning people out there that want to say some of these things. And I will grant them their well-meaningness. There's a lot of people that aren't. There's a lot of people that aren't sincere. And the people who are well-meaning are getting bamboozled by the people who aren't sincere. And what's going on is that now you have lots and lots of kids exploding, explosions. We're talking, you know, 400%, you know, 40 times more. It's ridiculous. I mean, I'm hearing stories of like, you know, six kids in one classroom identifying as trans. When, you know, back when I was studying all this stuff, it was, you know, aggressive estimates were like 1 in 1,000, 1 in 2,000. I went to a high school with 2,000 kids. I knew I was probably the only kid struggling with this. Now, I'm going to say that having learned a lot, I think there are a lot more people that actually do struggle with these questions at some point in time in their life. You know, if it's actually more along the lines of 1 in 500 and 1 or 200, I wouldn't be surprised. But it's not, you know, 6 out of 30. It's not 25%. And so what happens, and this is why it's a liberty issue, is because what's being done is it's being taught in schools that being uncomfortable with who you are, being uncomfortable with your body, being uncomfortable with these things in general is, it means you're actually the opposite sex. And the only way that you're not going to commit suicide is if you go on puberty blockers, hormones, get surgeries, all these things. Parents are being scared into it. Kids are being scared into it. And what happens is it is taking the choice away from future adults. It is taking choice away. It is taking the choice away from individual human beings to be able to grow and learn and struggle. Yes, struggle. And they're being kind of, chaperoned down this path that a lot of people are starting to regret. And when you take away choice, that means you are dehumanizing someone, you are abusing them. And that is anti-liberty. Liberty means you have a choice. And if you're telling kids that, and you're telling parents especially, that they don't have a choice, that the only answer is the transition, that's abuse. That's dehumanizing. That is anti-liberty. And it's not compatible with the libertarian message.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to unpack there.
Well, I think one of the things that comes to mind is that, you know, libertarians, we rightfully throw ourselves against the state, and like we make the state the big boogeyman that we focus most of our energy towards, and rightly so. But tyranny and authoritarianism doesn't just come from the state. There are, you know, anyone can violate your rights and your liberty, and so we as libertarians should oppose.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All authoritarianism and all violations of people's rights and liberties, no matter where it comes from, whether it's from the state or whether it's from the culture. And I think, you know, and this might be something to, you know, kind of get your thoughts on in terms of like what you experienced, you know, in Philly and in the media, in your sort of journey. We hear this expression a lot that politics is downstream of culture, which I think is kind of true, but I also think it kind of works both ways. And I think beyond just the fact that I think it connects to liberty for the reasons you stated, because I think tyranny can come from anyone, not just the state. The state has definitely got their hands, you know, pretty dirty. I mean, I think they're elbow deep in this stuff, both in the you know, the left's heavy influence and control of the media and of the education system, both the like high school and public education and the post-secondary education system in the universities. You know, I think this is sort of like people, especially young people, and young, you know, it's like it doesn't just stop when you're 18, right? It's like people's brains are still developing past 18 up until they're 25 or older. I mean, and people are being constantly bombarded with all of these different things. And so I'm just curious to hear what sort of threads you can, you know, pull from that in terms of like things you can point to from your experience, both, you know, and also connected however you want. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of this that connects to where you live in Philly, which you said, you know, you had a lot of local support. And so I'm sure that, you know, definitely had an impact. And I'm sure there was plenty of, well, like you said, people whose intentions weren't to harm you, but they were probably, you know, swept up in this whole thing as well. So yeah, what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, we Torrin, live in this. Before you answer, one thing I was wondering about that I'll just add on to that. Where do you think the pressure was coming from? Like, was it coming from like specific influencers online, or was it like more from the government direction? Like where do you think the pressure to transition was coming from originally in your mind, since you described it, but I'm wondering where it mostly came from.
Yeah. So I'll start with that question and then kind of bleed into the other stuff. Cause I think it wasn't coming from the government at the time, although the more I learned, the more I realized the government has had its hands in this, which is just gross. But for me, it was influencers. You'd see people online and you see these people who are just so happy and so thrilled to, you know, finally be living their truths. And that's kind of what's going on culturally, is we're told we have to live our truths. We have to be our most authentic selves. And it's like, oh, your most authentic self is Audrey, so you need to live as Audrey. And we live in this culture, in this society that denies the existence of objective truth. It's becoming very nihilistic. There's no truth. There's no purpose. And it's just this cultural flow. And if that's the case, you know, why not? Why not just go do what feels good and ignore everything else? But the thing is, and I've talked about this in the past on some of my podcasts and things, like we as individuals, you know, true, free, sovereign individuals are also part of a broader community, like a broader truth. Like we are, you know, it, to some extent, yes, the libertarian message is we are kind of the ultimate authority, at least on this earth and of our lives, depending on your, you know, religious beliefs. But even as like a sovereign, an individual sovereign, like we still have to interact with other sovereigns. We still have to interact with science, psychology, medicine, like all of this stuff. It's all interconnected. We don't, you know, no man is an island. We don't live on our own. And what's happening is our culture is like taking all of that and kind of twisting it and saying, you know, for the things that just make you feel good, then just live it, do whatever you want. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. It doesn't matter what science says. It doesn't matter that they actually can't make a man into an actual woman through surgery or hormones. Just do it. And if you are that thing, then therefore, if you say you're that thing, then therefore you are. But then it's also opposite, where, you know, if it's something that benefits the authoritarians to kind of harp on, say, science or communalism, you know, it's like the left today, they aren't full communists, because in some ways it's like they celebrate this very individual, just, oh, just do whatever you want, be whoever you want, go do whatever. But when it benefits them the other side, it's like, oh, the science says that you need to be locked down. The science says you need to wear a mask. The science says you take a jab. It's all about this one-sided political, socio-political thing that they're gonna jump on anything they can. And yes, the government has their hands in it. I mean, you guys have both heard of the great and wonderful former PA Secretary of Health, Dr. Rachel Levine, correct?
Yep.
Well,
unfortunately, yeah.
Well, Dr. Levine is now the Assistant Secretary of the Department of Health or whatever, and for Biden's administration. And Levine was just the other day put out some video telling all pediatricians that they need to support affirmative care for all kids who want to transition.
When did you say this happened?
This was just the other day. Dr. Levine was also behind getting state funding. Our tax dollars as PA residents went to CHOP here in Philly, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. It was a really bad pun because CHOP was chopping off children's body parts.
What?
As far back as 2016. Kids as young as they were performing double mastectomies as young as like 15.
Oh my God.
15, you said?
And maybe younger, I don't know. I know it's gone on at younger ages across the country, but it is happening. Like this whole thing where the left is saying, well, nobody's getting sex change operations, the minors. Oh, garbage. Absolute garbage. You know, the right is not always right. The right is wrong on a lot of things, especially culturally, and especially how they respond to cultural issues. Sometimes they have the right ideas and the right premise on some things culturally, and just will absolutely be terrible on how to actually see that play out. And in some ways, the trans issue is one of those things that they have some of the right premises and just are terrible with it. But they anytime someone on the right, whether it's, you know, Matt Walsh or anybody brings up, oh yeah, they are performing, you know, these operations on kids, 100%. It is happening. Levine played a hand in Wolf's administration to get our state tax dollars to fund double mastectomies for girls at age, you know, 15. And that funding has like quadrupled since then. It's up in the millions of dollars a year.
How does that even work? Does it go to like those financially in need or just anyone?
I think they'll just do it on anyone. It's all, everybody's just looking to make a buck. You know, there's a lot of disgusting things about it. So either of you two right now, I can tell you this. You can go online. I will not tell you the two providers that I know of, because I don't want them getting any publicity. But either of you two right now can go online, fill out a survey, do a 15-minute interview. And if you know the right answers, which I could tell you the right answers, these companies will immediately issue you prescriptions for estrogen and have it sent in the mail, and you'll get it next week.
Ridiculous.
Okay.
I can't even get my asthma inhaler that easy.
Yeah. Yeah, zero, zero mental health screening.
Yeah,
as long as you know the right answer. And here's what's happening. here's what's happening to get around some of this. Some will say, well, oh, they're suicidal and these kids are suicidal and these people are suicidal. No, you go on to some of the trans forums and you start talking to them. They're like, oh, are you suicidal? No, I'm not. I don't want to die. And like, oh, just tell them that you're suicidal. If you tell them you're suicidal, you'll get it immediately. Which is actually kind of completely backwards. Because if you think you're doing a mental health examination and you say you're suicidal, like, actually, let's get to the bottom of this.
That's great.
And so, yes, the government is funding some of this stuff. Government schools. So, you know, CHOP's getting that money. CHOP has a whole curriculum that they are sending out to the local public schools. They along with the Mazzoni Center here in Philly, do trainings for teachers and educators here in the public school system. They do trainings over in Haverford. In the suburbs, like all of this stuff is coming to light and it's happening. And it started as this, you know, sort of, oh, trans rights and it's a marginalized group. And to some extent, I think there was some well intentions behind it. The more you look into the people who are behind the original movement, it gets shady really fast. Including the guy who coined the term gender. It was basically a pedophile. It gets messy really fast, but what happened is what Emma Goldman talked about in her essay in Michael Malice's book, where she was talking about the tyranny of the majority. You have something that's a movement or even somewhat positive cause. I mean, I think we all as libertarians agree that the people who identify as trans or struggle with gender dysphoria should be treated with dignity and respect. They shouldn't be ostracized from society.
Well, I'll even go even further than that to say, like, I think as much as I have always had, you know, issues with sort of like the gender ideology as a social conservative, I've never been in favor of any sort of law that would forbid people from exploring those options, because I think you kind of need to give people that space to sort of like kind of go on the journey that you did. Because I think it's like, what are you going to do? Like, right. Yeah, it's like, what are you going to do? Like threaten people going through that struggle with force and say, no, you can't do any of this. Like, they have to go through that journey, I think. And like, you know, I mean, when I see people like that, and you and others that I've seen go through transition and then come out of it, it's like, you know, I don't want to threaten men, you know, with guns to come at you while you're going through that. It's like, no, I want to love on you. I want to pray for you. I want to, you know, see you thriving. And, you know, listen, I think, you know, I mean, if my mentality was always like, if someone seems to be thriving after they transition, like, well, I still might have my personal religious disagreements with that, but like, whatever, like, I don't want to get in their business. It's not my business. But the problem now is, you know, as libertarians, it's like, as much as that's still my mentality, I think we have to push back against the government trying to weaponize this issue. And I don't know, what do you think their motivations are? Because like I sometimes struggle to sort of, like, it's so convoluted. It's like sometimes I think it's all about money, right? Like, it's just people are getting rich off of doing this, especially pharmaceutical companies. And that kind of maybe seems to be the Occam's razor explanation. Sometimes I'm full tinfoil hat. And I'm like, this is all part of a depopulation, brave new world, you know, central planning, the human being agenda. And maybe it's a combination of those things and more. But what are your thoughts on that?
Man, probably a combination of a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of money involved in it. There is a lot of money involved. The trans lobbying side of things is wild. I think, you know, there is something about power and authoritarian control involved in it too. And you can dive deeply in tinfoil hat, or you can just stay sort of at the 10,000 foot view. And, you know, like I said, it transitions kind of like getting addicted to that opioid. You know, people in power, in order to maintain power, in order to maintain control, profits, all of these things, they want a sedentary, addictive, addicted population. And, you know, for me, one of the big things that I was realizing was transitioning was kind of making me be like a perpetual adolescent. It was like I was going back into adolescence. And when I started realizing, oh, I got to grow up, I couldn't keep transitioning. And a lot, I'm not going to say all, I can't say all, but a lot of these people that I see transitioning, and it doesn't matter, you know, whether they're 16, 17 or 35, they just come off as petulant teenagers. And what better for an authoritarian power to have control than to convince people to stay in perpetual adolescence, be petulant, and just want free stuff from the government.
And to be like medically dependent too, you know what I mean? Especially with our healthcare system. And then it's like people, you know, it's like they, not to compare our situations, it's because they're very different. But I struggled with ADHD and I got off medication just for that reason of like, I didn't like being dependent upon medication that was coming from this authoritarian system that I just, you know, like I wanted to be separate from that completely, which is, you know, it's another aspect of this entire thing, although it's easy to focus on the gender ideology stuff. But, you know, one something we could gloss over, but we shouldn't, is the part of your story where you used psychedelic-based therapy to help get over the major struggle you were having mentally. And that's something, you know what, like, and then when you and I were talking about this, and then I remember talking to my one pastor friend about it, and just like, you know, what are your thoughts on the fact that, like, I know someone who, you know, yes, they're praying and about this and whatnot and seeking help, but they also used psychedelics as a way to, and, you know, conservative my mindset took over. They're like, oh, you know, it's like,
yeah, so it's like, yeah, like you said,
yeah, like the conservatives still definitely have things they need to improve on. It's like, you know, I and we can get into that like in the second hour, but yeah, I think as much as we can criticize the government for being heavily involved in the drug aspect of this, it seems also like there's an important part of this in terms of advocating against the war on drugs and against the criminalization of things like psychedelics. Which you know, I don't think you're the only person who has explored that route and found success on not just on this, but on other, you know.
Yeah. Well, now that you mention it, we need to have Torin and Regina on at the same time because I want to have that conversation.
There's actually, I'm finding there's quite a number of detransitioners that have had this similar story. There's a major link there that I hope somebody would explore. But yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, I don't think the libertarian response is outright, okay, let's ban the morphine. You know, I guess if I was an authoritarian, I would say, yeah, but I'm not. I also recognize, like, gosh, sometimes you got to find a way to treat the pain in order to set the leg, in order to set the bone, you've got to treat the pain. And for some people that pain is going to be more extreme than others. It's going to take more of a drastic thing, but the end goal still has to be treating the leg and the broken leg. It has to be treating what's the cause of the pain.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing that, if you're only giving the morphine and not setting the broken bone, it's abuse.
Well, all right. So there's a couple quick things I wanted to go over before we, in the first hour. First one is, there's someone out there, an adult who's struggling with dysphoria, or a child who, you know, thinks they are, or, you know, someone's a parent of a child who thinks they are, like, in any of those cases, what advice would you give to the person to, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, sort through their feelings, having gone through the experience that you have?
I would say, don't give up the fight, and don't simply believe that your only option is transition. There are other options. There's other ways to explore. There's a lot of people coming out with their detransition stories. There are people suing doctors and governments and things now. There's people that are starting to piece away piece an actual way through this. So first of all, don't give up hope. Know that you're not alone. There's a lot more people who struggle with this than you would believe. There are quite a few. You're not alone. I'm one of those people. You wouldn't know it just by looking at me, but yeah, I struggled. And there are a lot of resources becoming available. So one of the groups that I would really recommend you go check out is something called GenSpect. It's GenSpect, Gen as in gender, GEN, and then spect, like almost like spectrum, but just the first part, genspect.org. They're doing a lot of wonderful work taking like a real evidence-based care approach. So I don't think they're going to tell you advocate necessarily one way or the other, like transition or don't. But they're caring for a lot of detransitioners. They're looking for alternatives and those sorts of things. I would go and check them out. Like there are alternatives. There are other options. There didn't used to be. There used to be only the crazy white-haired guys, you know, screaming religion, saying I detransitioned. Now there's not. Go check out GenSpect. You know, follow me. If you follow me, you'll get connected quickly. Get connected with other detransitioners that I'm retweeting and whatnot. There's a community building, and there's real hope.
So thank you for sharing that. Last thing before we close that I wanted to give you an opportunity to go into this if you'd like, since you shared it with us before we started. Do you want to cover the recent Twitter and Instagram posts by the National Party?
Let me just say that the National Party made some Instagram posts and a Twitter post.
I'll show that real quick. So here we got the original post. So this is a screenshot of something that was posted on Instagram by the National Libertarian Party account and the Classical Liberal Caucus, which is a group of, I don't know the best way to put it, more centrist or left-leaning libertarians. This is the best way to put it, but either way, this was their statement on the National Libertarian Party's image here that they put, sharing something from the Gays Against Groomers account. So they obviously had some disagreements with it. They basically deemed it stirring a moral panic over private medical decisions.
I don't want to say too much. I don't want to stir up garbage with the CLC. I imagine many people involved with CLC, and quite frankly, the person who made the tweet, I don't know who they are. They could be very well-intentioned and really want to care about quote-unquote trans kids. All I can say is pushing back against the message from Gays Against Groomers isn't a way to care for trans kids. It's just not. The Gays Against Groomers, you're saying it's a right-wing moral panic. Gays Against Groomers isn't right-wing. I mean, they're gay. The right-wing, a lot of them don't like them. They are a lot of people that have been through a lot of garbage who, had they grown up in this environment, they may have been pushed to transitioning. A lot of them were gender nonconforming, but just grew up to be gay. And they're doing a lot of really great work to fight back against this ideology. And I applaud 100% LP National taking that message and amplifying it and saying, yeah, parental rights are under attack. Because you know what? This isn't moral panic. I'm sorry, but abuse isn't. Fighting back against abuse, calling out abuse is not moral panic. And what's going on, and it's not just with kids. I'll always caveat this. It's abuse when it happens to adults. Adults get groomed. I was groomed. I fell for it. I was deceived. I was abused. Yes, I am a 33-year-old man. I have to own my shit. I made mistakes, and I have to live with it. I have to live with it. But what 15-year-old who went to CHOP and got her breast cut off can say that too? No 15-year-old can make that decision. And I'm getting to personally kind of interact and know with a lot of these people who were those 15-year-old kids. So no, you pushing back against the LP for saying for amplifying gays against groomers message, no, that's not helping trans kids. That is hurting kids. It's amplifying abuse. And just because you're saying it in a way that it's like, oh, we don't want to have government control. Well, yeah, I can agree with that. I can agree with that. But don't push back against the message that this stuff needs to be reined in.
Freedom comes with responsibility. And we don't want the government to be the solution, which means we have to be the solution. Yeah. Which means, like, we have to come up with, you know, A, we have to call out evil. We have to call out tyranny when it happens, even when it's not coming explicitly from the government. And we have to come up with solutions then that don't require the government. It's like, listen, I don't want a police state. I do want there to be security and enforcement of property rights, but I can't just tell people, well, you know, here's the libertarian answer. Step one, abolish government. Step two, nothing. It's like, no, there has to be a step two. We have to have solutions. And one of the, you know, I'm not saying I have the perfect solution to this problem because it's complex and it's very, you know, there's a lot of different moving parts. But the first part of any solution we theorize has to be calling out the abuses that are happening and being able to stand on that on the truth.
Yeah, what you just said, that's exactly like what I've heard. That's possibly the right's biggest, what's the right word? It's the best argument against libertarianism I've heard from the right. Not like this issue specifically, but just, you know, if step one is, you know, fight for liberty, you know, step three is free society, then we don't really have a step two. That might be like, I mean, I, from our standpoint, I think we have something.
I think the Mises Caucus certainly, like, has that step two.
Things run that we're working on. We're trying to improve upon that, yeah, for sure. Like, I think the Mises Caucus is about as close as it's ever been to drawing up a plan that we've lacked for years. But
step two is run as a libertarian. Step two is decentralized revolution.
Right.
Step
that's exactly what we're here for.
We
step
have
two.
Step two.
It's step one is let's get Biden plus Kamala. LGBTQ plus. Shout out to Maj.
And along those lines, since you brought up Maj earlier, something that I noticed that really made me smile was the Mises Caucus store, the merch store, now has these shirts available.
Oh, nice.
So this is one of the original campaign shirts. I don't think there's that many. I don't think you can get these anymore in their original form, but you can get these shirts with the Mises Caucus logo and whatever it is, the right corner. You can buy those on the Mises merch store right now, but this is the original campaign shirt from
next week's stream
campaign.
Is just nothing but us showing off all of our libertarian shirts.
Oh, I've been showing them off on all the episodes I've been on. Like, I have some classic tees from the early days I haven't broke out yet. So
I'll have to break out my Bernie Bro t-shirt one day and wear it as a joke. If it still fits me. I was a little bit thinner back then.
Well,
but yeah, we're running along.
Yeah, I do want to end it on a bit of a higher note, though. So let me ask you this one more thing before we do the plugs. So you were doing a podcast of your own at one point, and you were talking about running for mayor as well at another point. So it doesn't seem like you're doing the mayor thing anymore. You did run for state rep, though. But, you know, just in general, talk about those projects and then what you have going on in the future. Like, what are you going to be working on next?
Yeah, so I was possibly going to run for mayor. I did end up running for state rep just as a paper candidate, and people were fed up enough to give me 10% of the vote here in my very blue district of Philly. So that was kind of cool. I didn't really campaign, but hey, I got like 2,700 votes or something like that. It's kind of cool. I've never gotten, you know, that many votes for anything in my life. So that was cool. Really, basically, what ended up kind of happening is, you know, I sort of woke up from all this stuff that was going on with the transitioning and just realized I need to get healthy. I need to, you know, if I want to go make a difference in the world, then I need to take care of my own house first. like literally my own house. I've got a lot of projects I need to do here at my house and get it finished. So I'm not living in this half renovated house. But I've decided to kind of take a step back. I'm not saying Don't Tread on Philly is finished. It's just kind of on a hiatus right now. Because I wanted to try to discern what's next. I want to continue speaking out on these gender issues and try to give people hope. I want to be a kind of a different voice, and I want to be able to give people hope and say, hey, I know where things can go wrong. I know where you can lose hope. I know where you can lose yourself. And if it's in gender or anything else, but say, hey, there is a backside. You can get through this. And so right now my main focus is I am doing a Substack. I haven't written in a couple of weeks. I need to get back onto that. TP Danowski. tpdanowski.substack.com. I write a Substack called No Consent Given. I'm talking about consent, how I don't really believe you can actually consent to gender affirming care, especially without massive psychological evaluation. And also I'd like to explore some other ideas of consent, such as the stuff that went on with COVID and other things as well. I want to do some writing for some organizations that have asked me to do some stuff. I'm going to be on Jacob's podcast later. I might be going on the Cajun Libertarian here pretty soon as well. Cool. And then I know I'll be on, I might be going on a podcast for one of these gender organizations as well. So really, I just want to try to spread some sort of a message of hope. And I guess the thing that I'm, let's say I'm blessed to know a lot about it. I'd rather have not found out about as much of this stuff as I did, but I think I'm blessed to have gone as far as I did, but not as far as I could have, and now can come back on the other side and kind of give a message of hope.
All right, thank you very much, Torin. Do you have anything else to plug?
No, that's about it. Thanks, guys, and glad to be a part of all this with you.
All right, well, you still got Don't Tread on Philly for Twitter, right?
Yeah, I haven't been active on it. Again, I'm thinking about maybe somehow converting some of that stuff to some of the more personal work I'm doing. But right now the main place to follow me is I got my Twitter handle there at TPDNWSK.
Yeah, and some things that I wanted to touch on to fill in some of the gaps of what you were saying earlier, real quick before we end. So not only did Torin get attention with Don't Tread on Philly through like the local paper? I believe it was the Inquirer that did it. Was it the Inquirer that did the article about?
They got a picture of us in the article.
Right, oh, exactly. I had a picture of you there.
I got a hit piece written on me calling me Nazi, white supremacist, anti-Semite.
When you were still Audrey.
Yep.
So that makes it even more funny. But beyond that, yeah, you attracted the attention of the Inquirer on several occasions.
Nazis, we're the worst Nazis in the world.
We're
trans.
Well, now I'm a detransitioner, so that's even, it's doubled down. It's even worse.
I don't know. That's too confusing. I can't do all that in my head. But yeah, so there's that. But also, like, the Mummers Parade, for those of you who don't know, that's the Philadelphia New Year's Day Parade. That is possibly the biggest New Year's Day parade in the country. It's a big deal in the city. There's a big legacy and tradition behind it. So it's no small thing. It's no, like, small town parade. It's huge. They, like, work all year for that. It's a huge deal to go to there and get the attention of all the Mummers. Because a lot of them are on board. Just like anybody who lives in Pennsylvania outside of maybe Pittsburgh didn't really experience this. Like Philadelphia, you were basically a second-class citizen. If you didn't show your vax card, you couldn't go eat indoors anywhere. You had to like sit outside in like November, December, cold weather. If you wanted to go out to a restaurant,
I got spit on, told to go kill
it myself. It was just a caste system in the United States. It really was nothing short of that. So that's the kind of dark times we were in back in January when this was going on. But beyond that, the work that Torin and others did on Don't Tread on Philly earned, I don't know if it was for the individual or the organization, if it was if it was like specifically given to, I think it was both, but the award for the best issue coalition at the Libertarian National Convention was given to Torin for Don't Tread on Philly.
I should have brought that down with me. I forgot it.
Yeah, you should have. I know, because I was right there with you when you got it. So that was an amazing moment for you. So congratulations on that. I couldn't let it go without
mentioning that. I wish I had lost my phone right before they announced it, and I was like, I was the opposite of sober. So I was like, I don't know what
to do. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had to tell, like, you know, 5 or 10 people, like, hey, make sure Audrey's down here. We gotta make sure she's nearby.
I had just lost my phone in the casino. I got it back.
Yeah, but you showed up at the right time, and once I had my eyes on you, I made sure you didn't leave.
I appreciate it. That was a lot of fun. The LPPA convention was a lot of fun. The national convention was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
three times.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure when I like nudged you to the stage was like the hardest I pushed someone in a while. okay, but Jacob, you got anything?
No, just I mean, if you're watching and you want to hop on, the stream should be in the Facebook or YouTube chat. I put the link for the second hour or however long we go. So. But no, that's it. Thanks, Torin, for coming on and sharing that with people. And I think it's an important message, and I'm excited to see where you take it, and you know, the people that you'll be able to help and reach.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that conversation you have too on the next hour. So we'll have you back on, Torin, at some point, maybe to talk with Regina and do a deeper dive into the psychedelic side of things a little bit more. I think that'll be fun.
Sounds fun to me. I'm down.
All right. So I'm going to remove you for a minute and I'll close it out. All right. So, Jacob, one thing that I don't know if we got to mention on this podcast at this point, there's been some changes happening with you or with your show that you do. So what's been going on with that?
Oh, well, my show, the Daniel 3 podcast, is still going on. But I've also recently started a second show called Biblical Anarchy, which is part of the Libertarian Christian Institute. So I'm excited to be doing that project with them. And the only change it really created in my show was that I'm not, you know, my show was kind of alternated back and forth between sort of like my more interview, laid back, casual style episodes with more like expositional, you know, Tom Woods style, like focusing on deep dives into particular, you know, theological or political topics. So those style episodes are now going to be exclusively on the new podcast. And the Daniel 3 podcast is going to be, you know, a bit more laid back in its purpose. And yeah, I'm excited to continue doing both. And yeah, if you want to watch the Daniel 3 podcast, that's going to be starting here in a few minutes when we're done here. And the other one, if you are so inclined and you want to go check it out, you can go to biblicalanarchypodcast.com or libertarianchristians.com and check it out.
But yeah, so which podcast is this interview going to be on?
The Daniel 3 podcast.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. All right, everyone, definitely check that out. The link was posted earlier in our chat. Any closing words?
No, I think it was a good episode, and it's been cool to kind of have the, you know, I don't know the right expression, but we were able to sort of watch Torin go through that journey. And, you know, I'm really glad that the Mises Caucus was a home for him, and that he felt welcomed, even though, you know, like you said, there's people that probably, including me, who, you know, kind of struggled with, like, don't quite agree with all this, but you know, we treat people like people here, and we don't have to agree. You know, that's the other thing we didn't really talk about, but I'll my closing thought as far as it pertains to the caucus stuff is that, like, our mentality has always been like, listen, like, we don't care what religion you are, we don't care what gender you are, we don't care what your beliefs are, what your lifestyle is. If you hate the state, if you hate the regime, if you're against the wars and the war on drugs, and you're anti-Fed and you're pro-decentralization, you know, then you're one of us, and we can work together on these issues that we agree on. And you know, the Mises Caucus coalition and culture is way more diverse than its worst critics will try to portray. So it was definitely diverse of enough a culture to allow someone like Torin to, you know, be a very active member and to go through the experiences he went through. So I think that says something about, you know, first of all, it says something about Torin, just in his character and his strength to get through all that. And I think it also says about something about us as a group and what we're made of and what we're about.
Yeah. So I'll close with something as well. So just going off of what you said earlier, like my social views, they aren't as clearly defined as yours, I'd say. Like, there's not like a certain religious or moral orientation that they derive from so much. But they've been very much in flux over the past few years, like 5 to 10 years, as my own mindset has shifted on multiple things, including like libertarian issues. I've become more and more like toward the libertarian side of things, like possibly right libertarian. But to my core, going back in time, I was very much socially on the left. If I described it to someone, I kind of put it in almost the same terms that like a Dave Rubin would, where I feel like I've been in the same place since, you know, maybe 2010 or so, but you know, the left left me behind.
Yeah,
certainly in terms of the social issues, I think that's true. So some of the things that are going on now are just completely surprising to me. But you know, back in 2010, like at least socially, I was almost as far left as you could go in that sense.
Talking to a former,
I mean, I was starting to see some things on the horizon, but and I never would have predicted things would have gotten to the point that they are now. So it was kind of a shock to me, you know, seeing, you know, at least at first seeing like Torin and the experience that he went through, because I hadn't wrestled with any of those topics in a long time. But, you know, one thing that's never changed is trying to, you know, my wish to try and be supportive to any friend that I could be in this kind of situation. So that's definitely something I was happy to be able to do to the best of my abilities. So it was great having Torin on to talk about that. I guess the last thing I'll say again is, don't forget to fill out the call to human action, sign up for takehumanaction.com, to sign up for the caucus if you haven't already. And on that note, we'll end the episode. So thanks everyone for tuning in, and, don't forget to take human action. Oh, I almost forgot. I'm sorry. I wanted to say next week's episode. Next week, we're going to be having on Jake Green, who did the documentary on Shane Hazel's campaign, and Nick Selesky, who's an organizer in Georgia, who was working with Shane as well. So we're going to be talking with them about some of the things that have been going on with Shane's campaign. All right. Now, don't forget to take human action. Until next week. Bye now.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.